Om Gyanati Murandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati svapadantikam Pancha kalpa turubhyascha Kripa sindhu bhayevacha Putitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. Please all mute your phones or whatever it is. I guess you all do. Okay. Anyway, they say that every cloud has a silver lining, and I spoke this morning that the silver lining of the pandemic is that most people, not all, some have to work and then stay home with their children, but most people, or most devotees, seem to have a bit more time for contemplative activity, and specifically the amount of classes that they're hearing. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Everything begins from hearing. That's how we change our consciousness. The way we change our consciousness is our consciousness is limited. And any person who is honest, and grows, anybody who grows year by year realizes that their vision or frame of reference was limited. Otherwise, what does growth mean? Growth means that you perceive your world, the world and yourself at a higher level. So we should also assume that we're still in the process of growth and we need to expand our consciousness. And the process, how we expand our consciousness is we hear from faith, from that source and those who represent it, which we experience as an authority in knowledge, in this case, representing the Vedic knowledge. And we hear about it and we think about it. And then when we understand it, we Gyana Chakshus, we apply it in our life. And by applying it in our life enough, that which we are seeing theoretically becomes realized. We actually understand it. Like we may have a habit. So we may understand that the habit is wrong, but we don't see it as wrong. We're still very attracted, let's say alcohol. Someone's an alcoholic. They may come to a realization that alcohol is bad, or an understanding, but they have not yet come to a realization. They don't see it as wrong. Or for example, like with devotees and meat, when we see meat, we're not attracted. We're not attracted. We see it as something not to be eaten, but not everybody sees it that way. So realized knowledge is when you actually see the truth in a world. And the way that happens is by hearing, understanding, applying. And when you apply it enough times, then you actually begin to see it. And at that point, called realization, it gives you the ability to communicate it. Because what communication entails is the depth of understanding of a subject that you can reformat its form to accommodate the frame of reference of your audience. Without losing the essence. And these type of relationships are very dear to us. When a teacher can speak in a way and communicate in a way that we can understand things in a way that we can see things in a way that we can realize things in a way, that we expand our consciousness. Because expansion of consciousness means happiness. Expansion of things doesn't necessarily mean happiness, and usually it doesn't, unless the expansion of things is a need that you require for the change of your consciousness. So I think it's really great that there's so many classes and so much hearing going on, and people get a chance to expand their consciousness. And what is intelligence? He values things, or he sees good and bad happening to one in terms of the facility it gives to expand the consciousness. This is one way, without getting into any depth, how we can understand why is there evil in the world if there's a God. Because his good is expanding consciousness, and sometimes difficult things have to happen to do that. And if you don't, think of the person that you least respect in the world. Understand that he's also part of God, and of God's mercy, they will try to change their consciousness. And then think what God would have to do to exact that. Now, I'm going to give what I've been doing the last few weeks. I don't know how long this will last. I'm picking out that seminars that I've given over the years, mostly outside, but it's somehow or other, when you have to communicate things outside, where people don't have a frame of reference, it tests your realization in such a way that the presentation is also enlivening, or even more enlivening, for people who have a frame of reference in Krishna consciousness. Now, this particular seminar I got from listening to Vaisheshika Prabhu. Quite often I get calls from him when he's giving a talk, quite often. And he says, do you have any ideas? And I give him ideas. I give him things that I have before. So we have a reciprocation like this, but I heard this seminar and I thought, wow, it's a nice one to present. And of course, it's presented according to my own realizations. And it's the three keys to inner fulfillment. And we're talking about happiness. And there's nothing more important than happiness. And I remember from Aristotle, he made a statement that happiness is the goal. It's never a means for something else. If someone objects, no, happiness is not the goal. This is the goal. Then Aristotle responds, no, that's not the goal. That's just a means for happiness. And happiness doesn't mean selfishness, wanting to be happy, because actually happiness has to do with selflessness. Happiness really has to do with love and devotion and sacrifice and compassion and so many things that entail that are not selfish. Actually, I think Jiva Goswami defined happiness as real happiness is the pleasure you get from the happiness of another. So it's really interrelated with the soul. In fact, Nayam Lokas Tiyagyasya Kutanyokri. There's no, without sacrifice, there's no happiness in this life or the next. So it's the nature of the soul. So I'd like to give this kind of seminar, and we'll see how far we go. If I don't finish it, we'll have part one this week and part two the next week. A nice title, The Key to Inner Fulfillment. And the key is something that opens a door. So this is the key. You have to walk through the door. The key just opens it. So this is the key, how you open the door to inner fulfillment. And I think it's very, very practical. And I just first, before I talk about fulfillment, a very interesting subject, I just want to give a brief kind of conception or understanding of happiness. And I do that by asking a question. And when I ask the question, I ask the audience to fill in the blank with the first thing that comes to your mind. I will be happy when? Now, you know, hopefully you just, there's two choices. Actually, the definition of faith is very important. Faith, Prabhupada said, is unflinching trust in something sublime. So your faith is where your happiness is. That's what faith is. What you trust will elevate your consciousness. And you have two basic choices. I will be happy when, in the future, the world conforms to my desires. This is a theme that I often give. You may have heard it before. When the world conforms to my desires, my happiness is things. Or I'll be happy when I change my consciousness according to how the world presents. So this is actually the real happiness. Real happiness is internal. Let's just knock this out right now. If you had chose, I will be happy when, and the world conforms to our desires. And again, make a very subtle distinction. And I always do this, that Krishna conscious philosophy is not against enjoyment. It's just not the goal. So there's nothing wrong with getting things when it's connected to consciousness. If you get things that are not connected to consciousness, then they have no use because happiness is consciousness. So there's three reasons why the first faith is not happiness. One, to achieve that faith, to conform the world to your desire. And we think like this. I'll be happy in the world when I get this. I'll be happy when I get this. I'll be happy. The difficulty, there's three difficulties. One, we are not the controller. So if we invest in that type of thing, we'll always be unhappy because no matter how much we conform the world to our desires, it changes all the time. And second thing, even if you could do that, conform the world to your desires, it's filled with duality because it's temporary. So there's always a fear of losing it, and there's always a pain when you do, and you will. So we have to get beyond that kind of consciousness. I'm just looking at the world and how it changes. It changes individually around us. Now it's changing collectively for all of us. And we can see our faith by the degree that the change in the world causes us anxiety. Itti Hillison, she was in a Nazi war camp, and she became basically self-realized somehow. She was studying some type of philosophy or something. And she said, when you have an inner life, it doesn't matter which side of the fence you're on. She's saying that from someone being inside the concentration camps with the images of fences, et cetera. And the third reason is, even if you could have those things eternally, it's a bad faith, because happiness is not things. It's consciousness. It's actually the nature of the soul. So that's like a preliminary understanding. I like to get basically into the word fulfillment. It's very interesting, the word fulfillment. You know, you can say to someone, you have so many things, but are you fulfilled? Are you fulfilled? It means, are you satisfied inside? You have so many things, but are you filled? Not that you accumulate enough, but fulfillment, was it fulfilling? Did it put something inside of you? And that's exactly the same conception. It's interesting how the derivative of these words, it's exactly the same conception of content. Happiness is content. Content. It's the same word. What is your content? What is inside? And in looking up the word content, I think it was me that did this. I found a derivative from actually a poem by Shakespeare, where he talked about the heart's content in terms of happiness. In terms of happiness, the heart's content. And if you think about yoga and the goal of yoga, it's living in the soul. The goal, the objective is living in the soul. I talked about that this morning. I actually saw it in one commentary, the Bhagavata. I wish I would write things down. But it discussed the symptoms, the budding symptoms of the awakening of the soul, which is consciousness, which reaches its fruition in love, the beginning senses of love, our gratitude, our humility, our compassion, and fixedness in devotion. It's something deeply inside. And when I give happiness seminars, I got a great quote from some French philosopher. Again, I don't know who it was. He said, pleasure is the happiness of a madman, and happiness is the pleasure of a sage. And it's interesting, using these words interchangeably, for satisfaction or happiness, but a differentiation also. Happiness may be referring more to the internal condition, and pleasure to the external satisfaction. So pleasure is the happiness of a madman, and happiness is the pleasure of the soul. And that's yoga. When you achieve any state in yoga, when you clear out the mind, what's the whole purpose of yoga? The whole purpose of yoga, the ultimate stage of yoga, is called asamprajnata samadhi. Sampragata Samadhi is the sixth of the seven stages of yoga, where the mind becomes completely clear so that it reflects itself. And in the ultimate stage of yoga, which is the dissolvement of the mind, the soul has to simply reflect on itself because there's nothing external to reflect on. So whether you 100% agree with that philosophy or not, that's the idea. In all senses of happiness, philosophy, it's something very much, of course, there's, Epicureans or hedonists. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. But generally, it's not a very praiseworthy or lauded philosophy. But it's very something, it's inner life. And this is the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness. We do so many external things, but bhakti is not external. And what Krishna is looking for is not something external, some external accomplishment. If it reflects some internal attainment, that's pleasing to God. But he's looking for our inner life. And even listening to this lecture, it's about your inner life. We can't take our eye off of the ball, they say. It's about inner life. Yeah, so yoga means when the soul is living in its own glory. And when we talk about bhakti, what is that glory? It's when it's filled with devotion. To such an extent, Sandrandana Visheshatma, the sixth symptom of pure devotional service, at the level of prema bhakti, Chandra means like a piece of metal. You know, you can't put a pin through it. So your consciousness is so absorbed, is so filled with love that there's nothing else in the consciousness, to the extent that you're not even cognizant of anything outside. So the keys, how do we achieve this? And I'm going to talk, yeah. And the three ones, and I tried to develop them further from what I heard from Vaisheshika Prabhu, are gratitude, unclutter your life, and attentiveness. And maybe some of you heard me speak on this before, but I think, you know, when you speak on something, you get more and more depth. So the first thing is gratitude. And I want to discuss it first as almost like a goal. And we know in bhakti, the means and the goal are the same. It's just like a unripe fruit and a ripe fruit. So the, you know, we practice things to develop things. If you practice humility, it's to become humble. If you practice gratitude, it's to develop gratitude. If you practice devotion, it's to develop devotion. And this is just a story, you know, that really kind of struck me. You know, I was down in Colombia in the ashram at Cali, and a little bit of anxiety because Gunagrai Marge was leaving the world, and it wasn't certain when, whether I should go or not. And I had a talk with Kastuba, and Gunagrai Marj made him a devotee, so he was grateful. So he said, do you think you can get him a message? I said, well, I know his caretakers. I know the God brother. I think it was Borijan was there guiding Gunagrai Maharaj. Send me a message. So I forwarded the message to Borijan. And he played it, and it was Kasturba, you know, is so thoughtful and such an ability to clearly express himself. And, you know, he expressed his gratitude because Gunagrai Marj went, I forgot the neighborhood, but it was definitely the worst neighborhood in New York. And he went there to his place. And he brought Kasturba to Krishna consciousness. And then the tape was sent back to me that, and these were actually Gunagrai Marj's last conscious words. He heard the tape from Kasturba and he just said, love, 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 you know, and he started beating his heart. And then he said, gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. So I thought that was really significant because, you know, Gunagrai Marj, by the mercy of Prabhupada, left the world in Vrindavan, surrounded by devotees, and he himself was chanting the holy name. So what is in the heart? What is in the heart? Without gratitude, there's no love. It's the foundation of love. Because if you don't appreciate, you have no desire to serve. All these things, humility, you have no desire to serve. People who are not humble, they're not grateful. They always think they deserve more. Gratitude is really our foundation. When we sit down and chant the holy name, we have to access our gratitude. Otherwise, where will be the feeling in our chanting? We have to search the heart for our gratitude. And that gratitude itself, that gratitude itself increases the value of what you're appreciating. That's why the word appreciate means to value. It also means to increase value. So when you appreciate something, it increases the value, and likely it increases the value to what it's worth, not what you were valuing it for. It's actually the key to bhakti is this appreciation. I'm thinking of the verse, and this is arguably the most important verse. It's arguably the most important verse in Krishna consciousness. Trinadapi sunichena tororapi sahishnana amanina madanena kirtaniya siddhahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, offering all respects to others, and in such a state of mind, being able to chant constantly. And I wrote about this recently. I meditate on that verse. Why, when you're humble, can you chant constantly? Because when you're humble, you have gratitude. You appreciate what you're getting. And the degree that you appreciate what you're getting is the degree that you love those who bestow that upon you. So this humble soul chanting the holy name is just having so much gratitude, 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 and so much love. And therefore you can chant always because you're chanting in love. And love or devotion is the only activity that is causeless. You don't do it to get something else. And therefore, because there's no goal, there's no way to stop it. Nor do you want, because that is what pleasure is. We have a universal understanding here. I think that pleasure is love. And the highest love is this universal love where you love God, you love everything, and it appears within the holy name. You're humble, you appreciate it, and it appreciates. Your gratitude increases, and that gives you the facility to appreciate the mercy that you're getting, which increases your love for the appearance of God in the holy name. You know, it's always helpful to have simple analogies. Analogy is one of the pramanas. One of the 10 pramanas, one of the 10 means of evidence. What analogy does, it takes a philosophical concept and makes a vision of it in the world that expresses that concept in a way that you can understand, you can see something as truth that you couldn't understand intellectually fully. I think that's what analogy does. And I thought of an analogy myself of a child who is spoiled. They never feel love. When you're entitled rather than humble, you never feel love. No matter how much you get. Because the feeling I deserve is the opposite feeling of I appreciate. It's the opposite foundation. It's antithetical to the foundation of love. So a spoiled child does not feel love. And if a person's not grateful, child's not grateful, you're not grateful, there's no question of love. And this is a bhakti path. I remember when I was giving this seminar, there's one friend of ours, some of you know her name, Fatima, and she took gratitude training. And I called her and she had a lot of good points. I wish I could remember them, but yeah, she said that gratitude, it's not that you wake up, you can do it and list five things that you're grateful for. It's gratitude should be a state of being. And that's really, actually, that's the consciousness of a devotee. Because he sees Krishna in every circumstance and is grateful in happiness and distress because he has the conception and he has the experience that God is trying to give himself in every circumstance. And when he lives that life and responds to the world in Dharma and discovers the mercy of God in the change of one's consciousness, then when challenges and difficulties come, he's grateful. He's grateful. He has a state of being of gratitude. A devotee has a state of being of gratitude. It's a little bit hard to attain that without a realization of God. A state of being of gratitude. I'm just watching out the window. I'll just give you a little view. There's this wonderful devotee in New Jersey. I told this morning. And he has an interesting story. He has a restaurant in Madison Square Garden called the Cinnamon Snail. And he had, it was a success. He's closing it up because he lives in Jersey. My God, how much prasad he's bringing. It's unbelievable. So now it's closed down there. So at least on many days he just cooks. Let me just, I'll just chant Hare Krishna for 1 second. I just want to thank him quickly. I'll be right back. He's so nice. He, you know, some places devotees live 20, 30, 40 minutes away, and he just puts on their doorstep an incredible feast for a lot of people. Yeah, so it's a state of being. Actually, the cultivation of bhakti itself, it has to be grow with our gratitude for the mercy of God in every circumstance. And the real appreciation is consciousness. That's the real gift. The real gift is consciousness. Yeah. Oh yeah, another thing that Fatima told me, and I thought this is really important, that gratitude brings you to the now. Happiness is not in the future. The future is hankering, anxiety. Happiness not in the past, that's lamenting. The sochati na kanchati. Ramabhuta pasanatma. Anyway, sometimes you forget your verses, but it's the now. A lot of times you're in anxiety, but we're not appreciating what we have. I try that as a practice, even though when difficult things happen to me, I look what I have. I don't look what I'm missing, because I understand everyone has their cosmic challenge. I'm healthy, so I'm grateful. Someone else doesn't have health, but this is my problem, or that's my trouble. We try to look what we have. And on a spiritual consciousness, we always have Krishna. And that's the ultimate thing to be grateful for. And a spiritual life and a spiritual understanding. Neha bikramanasho sti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayata. Bhakti saves you from the greatest type of fear. The fear of suffering, non-existence. What a gift to realize the eternality of the soul. So many gifts. So many gifts we have. So I'll give you one example. After when I spoke to Fatima and she said that, it brings you to the now. Gratitude brings you to the now. What you have. And I kind of once wrote this article. We all have our kind of conditioning. And I'm amazed that some people say, I love to take long walks. I wrote an article, I hate country walks. Remember, there's there was this Vaishnava, a great Vaishnava named Varsana Maharaj in New Vrindavan. He's very spiritually elevated soul. And, you know, practicum is in New Vrindavan, I think they used to plow the fields with the donkeys. Practically, he could tell the donkeys to do it and go to town and come back. He had such a way with animals and different things. So he told me once that there's two types of devotees, earthmen and aliens. So earthmen are people that are really happy in the country and love to get, you know, their hands dirty and grow things. Growing up in New York City, my conditioning, he would call an alien. I never went camping. You know, what camping? What's that? So I just had this experience. I was preparing this seminar, and one of our congregation members opened up this incredible cafe. You'd have to see it, what he did. And he was into integrity economics. He actually studied that. So he purposely made the cafe only things which are locally grown and, you know, to support businesses. And he came to India on a pilgrimage. So I went to cafe and the gate, you know, it was like 15 minute walk from our ashram, and I got lost. And when you get lost, it's like such a long walk. And then when I got there, he wasn't there, and I had to walk back. And, you know, we live, it's called the city, but it's, you know, there's horse farms and estates and, you know, there's still land. And when I was walking back, what's the first thing I did? The future. I wish I was back already. So much anxiety. I wish I was back. And then I said, no. Bring yourself to gratitude. And I started to appreciate. I was just appreciating my thoughts. I'm thinking of this seminar. I'm so grateful that I can think in this way. And then I was appreciating the beautiful country setting. And then before I knew it, I was back. And yeah, the oppression of time generally exists in the future. It's like when you're chanting, if you're thinking of finishing, it takes forever. When you can appreciate what you have now and focus what you have now. I'm doing a lot of chanting here, and whenever it seems to be tedious at all, I really just try to focus on the now and appreciate. And the power of gratitude also is you value something, you develop a service mind. You develop the attitude of service, and that's really, that consciousness of service is what really gives one satisfaction. Vaisheshikabhu, he did many things. At one time he was selling water purifiers or something because he had to maintain. He was always distributing books. So he read a book by Dale Carnegie, you know, how to stop worrying. And he said, when in anxiety, just think of someone you can serve. How to stop worrying? Think of someone you can serve. Because you're worrying about what? You're worrying about the future. You're worrying about this. Think of someone you can serve, which can be done now, and which is that contentment of the heart. Flip the switch, he said. Flip the switch. Oh. Let me just think of a few more things. Oh, yeah. You know, if you ever teach or speak, one of the most important things is to appreciate your audience. Madhavananda Prabhu, I didn't give a class, I know where he got it from. You can. There can be a there can be an audience without a teacher, but there can't be a speaker without an audience. Anyway, this gratitude is so key and cultivating it. And of course, I already spoke about the highest spiritual platform where you actually understand and can extract in every circumstance, no matter how difficult and trying, the jewel of realization that God is trying to give you to bring you to a higher level of consciousness. Yeah, I can't go so late today because I have some other things to do. So I'm going to just quickly finish up with the other two and unclutter your life. Unclutter your life. I was talking this morning, someone sent me a little short 9-minute documentary interviewing the Mother Superior at this Carmelite monastery or nunnery, whatever it's called. And the feature of this is that there is a gate that separates them from the outside world. So even their parents can only come once a month and speak to them with a gate, like a window. It's a pretty big window, but there's like a gate. And they describe it as like the rib cage protects the heart or something like that. And it's obviously a contemplative ashram. And she had a lot of nice realizations. But, and this is so important. Your decisions determine your fate. What you are now is based on the decisions you made in the past. What you will be in the future is based on the decisions you make now. And God is always giving us direction within the heart. The spiritual master is the external manifestation of the super soul, but the super soul is the form direction of our intelligence. God is speaking to us. And to hear him, this is the next one too, but I'm going to make a correlation, is you have to be attentive. Perception is based on attentiveness. You don't perceive things unless you're fixed. I'll discuss that. But she described one of the reasons why people in the world suffer so much and increasingly so is because they cannot hear God speaking in the heart because there's too much noise. And just look at social media. It's so much noise. A lot of the best decisions will come right from your heart. And the Gita says, when the senses are controlled, the super soul is at reach. I spoke about this morning in another context, so I see some of the same names. I'm not gonna speak the same point exactly. What's the whole platform of yoga? I coined this term, all problems are perceptual. They're not actual. If you can actually see what's there, there is no problem. The greatest problem is death. Death is the illusion of non-existence. It's the mind. When you see what's there, when you are enlightened, when the clutter is gone, and you can actually have a clear vision, most of your problems are gone. So it's this clutter, it's this noise. She's saying, you know, that's the monastery. But she wasn't just talking about the monastery, she's just talking the need for prayer, the need for meditation, the need to simplify your life. There's one book that describes clutter around you as visual noise. A clear mind becomes so productive. I'm noticing that a lot when I'm staying back here and I'm doing a namvrat, a lot of meditation, a lot of chanting. I can see the clarity of the mind and how productive you become. Can you imagine that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, without computers, they were writing these incredible books, and they had to write in Sanskrit poetry where you just could, even if it was a philosophical statement, you just couldn't use any word. You had to choose a word that rhymes and still get the meaning, and incredible poems and dramas and poetics, and it's all in their minds. Because their minds were uncluttered. That's the beauty now, I think, the silver lining. I described when this guy brought his food last week. Some people, I see the same people, there's many new people. Somehow or other, I ate too much, and I have this incredible digestive power. I don't know where I got this from, but I'm blessed. That's one of them. But somehow or other, the next morning, nothing serious, but my appetite shut off. And I was described, that's what's happening outside. God is reducing the noise, maybe just to give us a vision. How clear our thoughts can become when he does that. Cleanliness is the vision of, is the object of sight in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, when it's manifest externally in sound or sight or smell or touch or taste, when the objects of your senses are in goodness, it moves the mind to goodness. Environment powerfully affects consciousness. So when it's uncluttered, that's another thing I'm realizing with this. You know, maybe there'll be a financial downturn. And maybe we won't be able to clutter our houses so much. A lot of times with junk, and I'm talking about myself also. The simple life, uncluttered mind. So this is so essential. And the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness is the platform of peace and happiness. The perception is higher. and the contentment is higher. The more you see what's there, the happier one becomes. There's a clutter on every external clutter, internal clutter, noise clutter. Maya Sukaya, Prabhupada would talk. He said, for every step of material advancement, you take two steps backwards. So we have the social media. We're using it now, and I'm very happy we're using it now. But if it's not used properly, it just increases the clutter, the distraction, the agitation of the mind. I'll just briefly, I talked about attentiveness, and actually I think I heard Vaisheshupu give this statement, where attention goes, energy flows. Especially in bhakti. Because attentiveness is such a part of love. In a relationship where someone is not attentive, someone doesn't give you the time of day, someone doesn't listen to you. The worst thing is when you're speaking to someone, when they're already wanting to talk, they don't get the benefit. So the whole process of bhakti is based on focus and attention. Realization is based on attention. The practice of yoga, there's four things. It's based on concentration over a period of time without any interruption and in the right mood. Then you get benefit. There's no perception without attention. It's not just the eyes. The consciousness has to be directed by the mind to the eyes. Otherwise, you don't see things. Otherwise, you don't hear things. I gave the example this morning. You're in a class. And if your mind wanders, do you hear that class? Do you hear one word of that class? I often describe this incredible TED talk by the greatest pickpocket in the world, Apollo Robbins, called The Art of Distraction, where he wanted to show that if you're not perceptive, if you're not attentive, you don't perceive things. And he had a way of distracting one's attention. So he called someone on stage, and without anybody being able to perceive it, he pickpocketed this guy blind. And at the end, he said, we give you awards for being a nice sport. And he gave back his wallet, his keys, his credit card, etc. The art of distraction. So you're not attentive. At the end of the show, he had a different shirt on than he had at the beginning. So he's trying to make us distracted. We're trying not to be distracted. Which is why bhakti is the best yoga path, because attachment is the best attention. And that's bhakti. And it's human life. We have free will. This is the whole purpose. Where do you put it? Where do you focus it? And where you focus it will be where your life will go. I think I've told the story often about visiting this great saint, Ramesh Baba, and his servants would bring you up to see him at any time. The door was always open. He was like this sadhu. Sadhu was always open. And he was shaving, which I will do on Tuesday. He was shaving, and his face was all filled, because he shaves his head with shaving cream. It's all filled with shaving cream. And he was half shaved. And immediately he said, because it's his nature, is there any service? That's a sadhu. You see the world through the desires of others. What a heart. And I didn't know. I said, well, can you give me some advice? He said, everything is based on your good thoughts. From your good thoughts comes good action. From your good action comes good habits. From your good habits come good character. From good character comes the right destination. So this attentiveness in purifying the mind, in our practices, in developing our relationships, it's so essential. Anyway, what I'm going to do now, because I have maybe 15 more minutes before I have the next. Jan asked the question, do difficulties happen to body and mind and not to soul? This is debated, actually, even in Vaishnavism, where is agency? What initiates action? In yoga philosophy, they say it's not the soul, it's just the mind. The soul has no agency. It all happens in them. I find that difficult to accept, that the soul has no agency. The reason I find it difficult to accept is if the soul has no agency, can't initiate action, doesn't have free will like this, or it doesn't have agency, it can't initiate action, that all action is happening in the body and the mind, especially the mind, then the problem is when bad things happen, right, then what is your responsibility for them? Because they're all happening between God and your mind, and not the soul. So it's almost you're victim to a third party. Why should you be responsible if you can't initiate agency, the soul? Then why should you be responsible for all the things that you do? Why should there be karma? So I never really understood that. I became more Descartesian. I think, therefore I am. So I kind of say, well, the difficulties don't happen in the soul per se. The mind is transforming, but the soul is experiencing the vikara. The example is a boy with a pot of water. A boy wants to see the moon. He can't have the moon. The mother gives him a pot of water. It's heavy. It begins to shake. He thinks the moon is moving. The moon is not moving. But the way he's perceiving it, it seems it is. So in that way, the soul definitely has a perception of this. It may not be happening in the soul. Anyway, this is a very, Jan, there's one book when I get back up to Stuyvesant Falls, it's called Agency, Free Will, and Selfhood in Indian Thought. And it discusses all Indian philosophies. There's a question about the jiva falling. I don't really want to, it's too long, too complicated. I'm not going to answer that now. Anybody else like to share a reflection?
Maharaj, thank you for both classes.
Jaya, yeah.
The bomb you dropped at the beginning of thinking of a person that you don't like, and that thinking that Krishna is trying to transform them, and what would Krishna have to do that? That's like, that's mind blowing.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, so good to consider.
Wow.
And I know exactly the person I will have to think this about.
Well, I don't have no political announcements on my show. Okay, thank you. Any other people share a reflection?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Stakurani.
Yeah.
I really like when you shared what Vaisheshika Prabhu said, when in anxiety, think of someone you can serve.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah, it's
He said the one switch to service. like the service switch. If you're in anxiety, the service switch. Yeah, it brings you right to the soul, and it brings you something that can create joy immediately. Thank you. Anybody else like to share a realization, a point they got from the class that they like or would take back?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, it's Indira.
Indira, nice to see you.
I liked what you said in the very, well, maybe not in the very beginning, but you said, as you grow, you realize your view of the world is limited. That's really interesting. I mean, I feel like a lot of people, like I remember someone saying to me, oh, most people don't actually change after the age of 18. And I thought, oh, that's odd. Don't you always want to grow? But yeah, I don't think you realize how limited your world is until you try to grow.
Right. And I think the point is hopefully having grown, understanding that what we are perceiving now, which is reality and perfect, is also going to change in the future.
Right.
But not everything. Someone told me after the age of 50, we don't grow, but we don't change. So we do become fixed in our ways, but I think, you know, hopefully not in the important ways. The important ways we can actually change. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Indira. Good. Anybody else?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. I really enjoyed, I really liked the whole section on clutter your life and where the senses go, because as a teacher, the parents were really concerned that the kids weren't going to learn anything online and that the rest of the school year was going to be a mess. And actually, I've never seen such great work being produced, and it's because the distractions aren't there. You know, they're not distracted by the kids sitting next to them. What's cool? Who's looking at what on social media? Now they're alone in their room just with the work and their thoughts. It's so uncluttered that the focus is there. They're zoning in on it and they're producing such great work that I've never seen anything like this. So it's just so true. I can't wait to share what you said, because it's just a testament of what's happening right now.
That's nice. Thank you, Melissa. Missy, thank you. Okay, and by the way, that was hilarious.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It really was good, I can tell you that. Okay, anybody else like to share any reflection? I got about 5 or 6 more minutes.
Hey, okay. Krishna Maharaj, it's Braja.
Hey.
I really liked what you said when you were talking about seeing Krishna in even reversals in life. And it makes me think of that saying that you say, when it seems like God is digging a ditch to throw you in, he's really digging a well to quench your thirst.
Yeah, I had that. And then the Iranian devotee that I know said that's from Rumi.
Oh,
but I didn't know that, but I heard that before. Yeah, it is. It's so, things are always changing. Yeah. Okay. One more person with a reflection.
I have a reflection, Maharaj.
Okay.
I enjoyed very much when you said anxiety pointed to the future, lamenting to the past, and gratitude brings you into the moment.
Okay. Who is this?
Laja Sheila.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I thought that's an interesting point. Good. Okay. I actually can go another maybe 5 minutes. Anybody else have a reflection? It's nice to see and hear people.
Hi, Maharaj. This is Isabel. How are you?
Isabel.
Sorry, I had to pick up my groceries, so it's like I'm a little messed up a little bit. I just wanted to say I actually changed for the better. Not that I was a bad person, but I think that since I yoga and bhakti entered my life, I was able to incorporate all those things I really wanted to change in my life that kind of always say I do. I was like that forever quote that people put up on Facebook that I want to do and I want to change, but it wasn't until yoga and bhakti that really – it set in to my life, and I changed in so many wonderful ways, and I feel like I'm like living another life within this life.
What a great testimony. That's so nice, Isabel. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, this is kind of funny, but I stay in Mayapur every year with Jagadish and Yugala. And at that time, she's a great cook, and she kind of cooks for me. And every day, there's this incredible lunch. And it's not necessarily light. So I joke with them that, or I'm going to put a sign on my ceiling that says, tomorrow I will fast. But the problem is every day I wake up and I see the sign. So it's tomorrow I will fast. But I'm glad you could make some changes. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? And then we'll end it.
Maharaj, just as a person who hates both clutter and noise, I just love that description of clutter as visual noise. I just love that. So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Gala. Just wanted to thank you for the class.
Oh, thanks for coming on, Gala. Great. Good. Good. Nice crowd today. So many people, so many different places. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Jagannath Priya. Thank you for a class.
Wow, from Gokarna. And those are her Jagannath deities. She's Jagannath Priya. And her service is to feed her deities.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Gomaraj, this is Kishori Radha.
And Tota Gopinath.
Hare Bo. Good. Wow. A day filled with classes, huh? It's ecstasy, right?
Absolutely.
I know. Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna
Maharaj, Sri Gandharvika. Oh, Hare Bo. Okay. What's the time difference there, Sri Gandharvika?
It's now 7:15 p.m.
Okay, so these kind of classes work out. They're good. Okay,
yes.
Good. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So I'm out getting some sunlight in an empty park, but thank you so much for the wonderful class always. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Athena. Great. Okay. It's just nice to see all the people in the community and from various places. Anybody else?
Krishna, it's Mukunda.
Hey, Haribo, Mukunda. Elijah, Haribo.
Haribo.
Elijah, Haribo. Okay, good guy. Okay, anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Thank you, Shori, you see?
Hare Bo.
Your whole house is filled with devotees now.
That's right. Soon.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Lisa.
Lisa, Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.
Great.
Nice to see you.
Good. Wow, I see also some names of people. Ingrid from Mexico is there. Hemalata from Argentina. You know, sometimes the connections are not good. Great.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I sent you a note on the chat.
I'm reading it now. Did you hear the class?
Yes, most of it.
Okay. Okay. You like to hear the name.
Thank you so much.
Of your friend, Fatima. Yeah.
Yes. So not just her name, but all about gratitude and how we should live with that mood right. All the time.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Bo. Thank you so much.
Hare Bo. All right. What's your name?
Rachel.
Rachel. Oh, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Nice to meet you.
Hare Krishna.
Hari Bol. Anybody else? Okay, I guess I'm going to, I see most of the names anyway. I scrolled, so I see all the people that are there. So it's kind of nice to see all the people that are there. Some are just phones, so I don't know, but that's okay. Okay, thank you so much. Anybody's around Wednesday morning at 7:30, we do Chaitanya Bhagavat. We had a good crowd this morning and really fun. People really like it, hearing about the rasa of Lord Chaitanya. Okay, thank you very much. Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayeva Cha Patitanam Pavanibhyo.